I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You don't think that it's time that somebody cared enough to have a dream?
Why are you getting so upset? This is not about you.
Yes, it is. You are a human affront to all women, and I am a woman.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you are. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
How do you go about getting an exorcism?
I beg your pardon?
Hi, this is Mark Kermode. Thanks for downloading this Kermode on Film podcast. This week, it's a bit of an extra. I'm joined by Jack Howard.
Hello.
Hello, Jack. We said we'd do a little kind of a Christmas extra. It's the season of giving, and we've decided to give to our listeners in the way that only we can.
And we don't expect anything in return.
Well, I do. I expect, yes, I expect them to tell all their friends.
Oh, yeah, sure. And, well, that goes on sale.
Numbers, you know, it's what it comes down to. But we decided that we would do a little Christmas extra, a little stocking filler of favourite Christmas movies. Mm. Now, this is a subject in which I am horribly well-versed. So do you want to go first or do you want me to leap in?
I think leap in if you think you have something to say.
All right. So hands down, no question, absolutely indisputable best Christmas movie ever is It's a Wonderful Life.
Of course. And if we're going to be boring, right?
Oh, thank you. So that's an impression.
No,
so that wasn't a...
No. Yeah, I was going to say, if we're going to be boring... We can sit here and be like, right, okay, let's try and pick a top three and obviously that's number one. But I reckon we should try and not include It's a Wonderful Life and have it as the undisputed champion.
Okay.
Obviously.
All right, but before we put it out of the way, can we just quickly do why it is?
Of course we can, okay. Yes.
So the most important thing for me, and I bore everybody to tears with this, is the whole thing about It's a Wonderful Life is it is a feel-good movie, which for a large part of the narrative involves somebody's life falling apart to the point that they want to commit suicide.
Yes.
And everyone's memory of it, you know, the critics at the time were very sniffy about it and said, oh, it's sentimental and it's schmaltzy and it's Capricorn and all that kind of nonsense. And of course it isn't. It's actually really, really dark. And everyone remembers every time a bell rings, an angel gets its wings and all that. So what they forget about is the absolute despair of George Bailey. And I remember that when... Trump was elected, somebody put up a picture of of the Bedford Falls sign replaced by the Potter, that was exactly what it was. It's like, oh, we've suddenly moved into the alternate version, the world in which George Bailey isn't there as a decent human being, so his brother dies,
yeah,
and the town is taken over by a Mr. Potter, and and it's all horrible and evil, and what we actually want is Bedford Falls back. And I literally remember thinking that the day after Trump was elected, they've taken Bedford Falls away.
Yeah, I must be living in someone's weird little dream fantasy that an angel's showing them, so it'll probably be over soon.
And I want Clarence to come and speak to me and say, look, it's okay, you know, I'm going to click my fingers and it will all be finished.
It's all going to go away.
So I love the dialogue. I absolutely love the performances. I love the fact that I did a program, the Secrets of Cinema program some time ago, that I co-wrote with Kim Newman and Nick, who's producing this. And Kim came up with this theory, which I agree with, which is that all the great Christmas movies are a riff on A Christmas Carol. And I said, okay, well, how is Wonderful Life a riff on Christmas Carol? And he said, well, it's simple, isn't it? It's, you know, it's the alternate versions of the past, present and future invoking ghosts. Basically, ghosts come down to show somebody what the world could be like if they were, you know, related to it in a different way. And it's just, it's the antithesis that in this case, Clarence comes down to show George Bailey what the world would be like if he wasn't just the decent, honest, truthful man, as opposed to the ghosts of Christmas past, present and future coming down to show Scrooge what the world will be like if he doesn't change. But the thesis is the same, because it ends up with the Christmas family hug and everything, you know, because people realise that there is value in stuff other than just money. And of course, the punchline of It's a Wonderful Life is everyone comes around and pays off the lost money.
Mm-hmm.
which is just so ridiculously moving.
Did you want to finish?
No, you're just to say that I can't watch it without descending into tears, but I don't think it's sentimental, or I think it's sentimental in a really good way.
Exactly, yeah, tough. Which is part of what I was going to say, is that I think it's a wonderful thing that it's a movie that celebrates the life of one person and how important they are to the lives of many.
Yes.
And they could have picked anybody, in a way, to show them how much of an impact, how much of a butterfly effect they've had on other people's lives without maybe them appreciating that. And I think that there's no better thing at Christmas. I think that the Scrooge story, obviously, being told you need to change, otherwise things will go bad for you.
Yes.
But I think that the catharticism of, I don't know if that's a word.
Catharsis. Just catharsis will do fine. But, you know, we'll have catharticism from now on.
I think we should all subscribe to that.
Yeah.
I think, the cathartic nature of being told, no, you are a good person and you have value and you are worth sticking around, it's sentimental, but in a really good way.
Well, it's the ultimate triumph of the everyman. It's the point is that what is brilliant about him is that he is an ordinary everyman, and that's it. And that's and that's what people, you know, people got all. Actually, some people thought that when It's Wonderful Life first came out, it was accused of being, you know, proto-communist. People said, oh, you should look into this. I mean, there was literally people's very serious thing. You should look into this. This is all communist. This being nice thing. That's all communists, you know. And I do think it's one of those films like Shawshank Redemption that has discovered. I mean, Wonderful Life became a Christmas movie staple as a result of its TV screenings. So it was, people found it on television. And I mean, I couldn't possibly go through Christmas without watching it. Because I think it is.
My mum has been very specific this year about that we're all going to sit and watch it. And I was like, okay. Sure. So I'm like holding off when I go back, because she wants it to be a family thing. And I'm way down for that. That sounds great.
No, it's just absolutely brilliant.
Hello, who's this? Oh, Mr. Welch. Okay, that's fine, Mr. Welch. Give me a chance to tell you what I really think of your wife.
George.
Will you get out and let me handle this? Hello. Hello, what? Oh, you will, huh? Okay, Mr. Welch, anytime you think you're man enough, you... Hello? Any...
Dad, how do you spell hallelujah?
How should I know? What do you think I am, a dictionary? Tommy, stop that, stop it. Janie, haven't you learned that silly tune yet? You play it over and over again. Now stop it, stop it!
I found, just disappointed, because of our age differences, Mark, which doesn't come up a lot, but...
I tried not to talk about it.
But I found It's a Wonderful Life through parodies first.
Yeah, sure.
So it was already this iconic thing.
Yeah.
Like, the same way that I discovered a lot of things, like, oh, The Simpsons parodied that, or whatever. Like, I'd seen people be shown their lives if they weren't in it.
Yeah.
In parodies, in television shows and sitcoms and stuff.
Yeah.
And so when I finally saw it, the emotional weight of it, I wasn't expecting, because I'd always seen it in parodies and comedies. But even in those, I think they take the idea seriously, that there's a wish of, I wish this never happened, or I you know, just to try and take away the pain.
It's a what if thing.
It's almost like the you know, this is only coming to my mind now, but like the way that Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is similar to, like, I wish I could just get rid of this.
And I love Eternal Sunshine.
Oh my God! It's...
Did you know that there's an uncredited Jim Belushi remake of It's a Wonderful Life, and it's called something like Mr. Miracle or Miracle. I mean, it is literally It's a Wonderful Life, but with Jim Belushi, and it is terrible.
I've never heard of this.
It's one of those things that nowadays it would go straight to your Netflix.
Sure.
Never watch this account.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to review it for Sight and Sound, and I was like 5 minutes into it thinking, they are actually remaking It's a Wonderful Life with Jim Belushi, but they're pretending they're not. I can't remember what the name is. It's something like Mr. Miracle or Mr. Magic or something. And it should be called Shit on a Stick, because it is just...
I was going to say, let's research and find out what it's called, but I actually don't want
to know. No, you don't want to know. I think it's...
I like this.
So they say in Spinal Tap, best left unsolved.
Larry Burroughs has spent his life wishing he had just hit that ball.
I just started a half a second sooner.
Were you thinking about that silly baseball game again?
But today is Larry's birthday. And Mr. Destiny has a way of making wishes come true.
Hitting that baseball has spun your life off in an entirely new direction.
Things have changed, lad. This is your house. Those are your children. Cindy Jo's your wife.
Happy birthday, darling.
God help me.
All right, so if we put Wonderful Life aside and say that's the Big
Undisputed
Daddy,
champion, okay. Obviously.
So now, to be less boring, as you so cruelly pointed out.
Because obviously everyone was expecting us to be, talk about It's a Wonderful Life.
So, go ahead.
Right, look. Christmas movies especially are a subjective thing.
Yeah.
And I think that they are...
Just cut with the caveats. Just
sure. I absolutely love Ron Howard's How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
I absolutely
love it. Every single year I look forward to watching it. I always forget how funny I find it. I'm always just a massive fan of Jim Carrey anyway.
Okay.
But I think that it's one of the last movies where people did like that now. Obviously, it's been remade recently with Benedict Cumberbatch and an animated version of it, which I haven't seen.
I didn't like it.
But
it's all right. But, you know.
Sure.
But it's all right because the story's all right.
Yeah, it wasn't all right because
it's, you know.
But like, it's one of the last movies, live action, where somebody's a creature and they're head to toe in a costume.
In the creature so costume, okay.
And I love that. Like, just even looking back at it now, just knowing where the film industry's gone, just as a nostalgic thing, I like seeing that. But also just... I think that it's sweet. I think that it's hilarious. There are so many quotable lines in it, and he is so incredible. I don't know how much of it was written and how much of it was Jim Carrey doing it on the day, but all the stuff of him in his cave being like, checking his diary and being like, 6 o'clock, dinner with me, I can't cancel that again. Like, all this sort of stuff. And it's a similar vibe of just, I'm... you know, a character who thinks he's not worth spending... he can't spend time with other people, and then learning that he has a lot of value and lots of things to bring to other people is a sweet story. But I think mostly it's probably because I find it absolutely hilarious.
Am I right in thinking that it was released a year later here than it was in America?
I have no idea.
No, I may be wrong, because we're now in the... It was in the 90s, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure actually it came out in 2000.
Okay, because I think, and I may be wrong...
that it may have come out in 1999.
Yeah, what I remember is the movie came out at the point... that I used to be the film critic for Radio 1, and James King took over.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in the first year that James King... So I think it was 99, 2000. I may be completely misremembering this, mm-hmm. but it was back in the time when the idea of simultaneous releasing around the world hadn't actually happened.
Yeah.
You know, in a previous era.
I remember going to Florida when I was 7 years old in 1999 and seeing The World Is Not Enough in a cinema, and then coming back and being confused as to why I couldn't
see it. Why it wasn't out.
Yeah.
Inviting me down there on such short notice. Even if I wanted to go, my schedule wouldn't allow it. 4 o'clock, wallow in self-pity. 4:30, stare into the abyss. 5 o'clock, solve world hunger. Tell no one. 5:30, jazzercise. 6:30, dinner with me. I can't cancel that again. 7 o'clock, wrestle with my self-loathing. I'm booked. Of course, if I bump the loathing to 9, I could still be done in time to lay in bed, stare at the ceiling, and slip slowly into madness. But what would I wear?
Well, I'm surprised by that, just because, I mean, I think I've only seen that movie once.
How do you remember it?
I remember it as being unremarkable, but then again...
It's one of those movies I've watched over and over.
But it may also be... I mean, this sounds stupid. I saw it having left Radio 1, and I was then working at Channel 4, and I was making, you know, documentaries about... you know, The Devils and Alien, and we were doing extreme cinema. My entire life seemed to be introducing movies in which people in various shades of leather committed unspeakable acts to each other.
Sounds a bit...
So, you know, exactly. So I just remember not being particularly...
fussed by it. Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, I'll go back and watch it again. If you say it's as funny as... I mean, I was very... I gave a fairly good kicking to Jingle All the Way, which I said, you know, it's a crassly commercial movie about the crass commercialization of Christmas. And nowadays, just the other day, it was on in my house because my family watched that movie. They think, you know, oh, Turbo Man. They think it's the funniest thing ever. And also...
put down the cookie.
But also, it's the thing about... they said, no, it is actually a movie about the crass commercialization of Christmas and it's smarter than you thought. I don't buy it, but I do think Arnie...
I think it's a little bit... It's like a little bit like The Room, where they try to...
Okay, fine.
I think that's what Jingle All the Way is like.
Of course, something a little bit like The Room is the definition of damning with faint praise.
But I think... it it's like it was made with one intention, and because of the execution, it's completely a different thing.
Okay.
And it's like funny without, but they're probably like, it was always supposed to be this funny.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I think Jingle All the Way is.
So listen, so if you're going to have Grinch, so I'm going to go for Terry Gilliam's Brazil, which people don't think of.
I haven't seen it.
Okay, so Terry Gilliam's Brazil, which people don't think of as a Christmas movie, but it's all very specifically set at Christmas. Terry Gilliam's Brazil is a version of 1984. You know, it's a dystopian future in which there is this one guy.
Come on, kids, sit down by the fire.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, what's the dystopian future? But there's this one guy who has these kind of dreams, flights of fantasy. But he is basically, during the course of the movie, those flights of fantasy are fought or crushed by the state. And it begins with this, with a mistake, an error, that a fly falls onto a teleprinter, and the Secret Services accidentally get Buttle and Tuttle mixed up. So it begins with the services breaking into the house of somebody who hasn't done anything at all,
right,
and taking him away, and he then dies. But at the very beginning, we're in a tiny little flat in some, you know, municipal building block. And the kids are having this discussion, and they go, "Mummy, how will Father Christmas get into our apartment if we don't have a chimney?" At which point, the special forces drill through the ceiling, crash down, kidnap the father, who then dies. And the whole of the rest of the movie is about the fallout from this whole Buttle-Tuttle confusion. And during the course of the movie, Christmas happens. And it ends up, this isn't a huge plot spoiler, it ends up with Sam Lowry, our hero, played by Jonathan Pryce, his superiors dressed as Santa Claus, taking him off to be tortured. So it's one of these things in which the whole movie happens within the spirit of Christmas. And every time something terrible is about to happen, you hear this chink, chink of jingle bells. Mm-hmm. And so it's, I mean, I've always loved it because it's the darkest, nastiest, bleakest Christmas movie. And it ends up with somebody having to escape into flights of fantasy because the world is so terrible and has been so poisoned by this thing. So I love it, but it is absolutely a Christmas movie.
Hi there. I want to talk to you about ducts. Do your ducts seem old-fashioned? Out of date? Central Services' new duct designs are now available in hundreds of different colours to suit your individual taste. Hurry now, while stocks last, to your nearest Central Services showroom. Designer colours to suit your demanding taste.
Okay, yeah, I think that that's interesting because there's that debate about Die Hard.
Oh, well, there's no debate about Die Hard. There's no debate. No, there is, but okay.
Yeah, that it is a Christmas movie.
Of course it is. Bruce Willis doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, I can't believe that Bruce Willis tried to definitively say, no, it's not a Christmas movie. Yeah. That's like the guy who created the GIF says it's pronounced GIF, and I'm like, well, you know, you're wrong. Yeah, Die Hard.
But there's also, it's like Scarlett Johansson. Because you go, you know, she pronounced it Johansson. That is how you pronounce it.
Sure,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But you go, well, it's Johansson.
Oh, you think it's Johansson?
Well, no, it's Johansson. Your name is pronounced how you pronounce your name. But the fact is, you know, whenever she says it's Scarlett Johansson and Tom Wilkinson sort of puts it, said it's Scarlett Johansson, you want to go, is it though? Because, you know, it's like...
I don't think that's much of a debate. Let's be honest. Going on.
No, okay, but okay. So Die Hard, here's the thing with Die Hard. I mean, firstly, Bruce Willis saying it's not a Christmas movie. You go, yeah, just because you made it...
Yeah, it doesn't mean you know.
Doesn't mean you know.
It's not for you anymore.
It is a story that is, you know, firstly set at Christmas, in which it's the Christmas Carol story that he has to discover. He has to do the thing about, you know, please tell my wife that I love her and I'm sorry that I didn't do the thing. So he has to get back. It's a story about him rescuing the princess in the tower, in which there's all the ho, 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 now I have a machine gun, and in which her name is Holly.
Yeah.
I think it's a Christmas movie. Yeah, and it begins with the Christmas rap thing, and it snows at the end. It is absolutely a Christmas movie, and Bruce Willis is only saying it isn't because he's a plank.
Yeah, I absolutely love Die Hard. I came to Die Hard quite late as well. I would say it's one of the best, but I wouldn't say it's like one of the ones... it's one of the ones I want to watch every single year, but it's not one of the ones I would put up there as like my favourite. Because when I think of a Christmas movie, I'm specifically thinking of like something that's putting me in a specific mood. So when I hear about What was one? What's Terry Gilliam's one called?
Brazil.
When I think about that, I'm like, I will probably watch that at some point, but it's not the sort of thing that I'm thinking.
You'll watch at Christmas.
Yeah, I'm not thinking. Okay. You know, I've just got this thing in my head. I've got this imagination in my head of you and your kids when they were younger, being like, "Come on, kids, we're gonna watch Brazil.
Gonna watch
like,
dystopian fantasy.
Not again."
Okay, right. So your go.
Okay, another one that I absolutely love, again, from childhood, and it's probably better in my mind because I haven't seen it for a while, but is the first, and only the first, The Santa Claus.
Okay.
With Tim Allen.
Okay. Where, wow.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. These are the films that I saw when I was a kid and like grew up with. And I, for a long time, didn't get it. Not in the way you're supposed to. I just thought Santa Claus was spelt with an E at the end. I didn't know it was, because that's how I saw it every single year. And I didn't know it was about contracts and clauses in contracts.
You didn't get the Santa Claus
I didn't
pun.
Get the pun when I was a kid. And then as I got older, I was like, oh, it's got layers. I absolutely love it. I think that it's Tim Allen doing a good job. And then, you know, just before he started phoning it in, I think it's a really good family story. I think it's like, you know, parodied beyond belief now, the idea of like...
It's Miracle on 34th Street meets The Fly.
Sure. Yeah, you know, yeah. He turns into Santa Claus.
Shall I tell you my story? Actually, this may be where I'm misremembering this from in that case.
Go on.
This may be why I think The Grinch was released in two different years. I had to go to Disneyland Paris to interview Tim Allen for the Santa Claus.
Okay.
No, but here's the thing, okay? Firstly, I wasn't a fan of the Santa Claus.
I imagine you were. I was sort of... You know, I wasn't looking forward to bringing this up.
No, but it's fine. You know, it's fine. You did Broadchurch and all that stuff. So I went on the metro, whatever it was, what's the train that goes to Paris?
The Eurostar.
The Eurostar. Went the Eurostar to Paris. Took forever. Got to Disneyland. Johnny Vaughan was there. And my main memory of the day is that before we got to interview Tim Allen for like 8 minutes, they let you go on Disneyland. So I went on a bunch of roller coasters with Johnny Vaughan, which was a weird thing because I don't really know Johnny Vaughan very well, but we spent a day hanging out at Disneyland. And I just wanted to be home and took a very long time to get there.
Like you're in a Christmas movie.
Yeah, it took a very, very long time to get back. And in the middle of it, I spent 9 minutes interviewing Tim Allen about a film which I didn't like. And he was the end of the day, and he was quite tired, and he wasn't very good. And then when I got back, it turned out the DAT machine hadn't recorded. The DAT machine was a digital audio tape recorder. It's one of those things that you pressed a number of buttons. You know, when I started, there was reel-to-reel tape recorders, and you could see the reels going round, so you knew it was recording. You had to churn it yourself, exactly. But with a DAT machine, you didn't know if it was working, and sometimes it wasn't. Like, quite regularly, it wasn't. Anyway, so I came back without an interview with Tim Allen, and...
For the best, exactly.
And I remember Radio 1 saying, "How was it?" And I went, "It wasn't."
We've got nothing.
A sacking offence, but you know.
I know you're Scott Calvin. You know you're Scott Calvin. So let's make this simple. I say name, you say Scott Calvin. Name?
Chris Kringle.
Name?
Santa Claus.
Name?
Père Noël, Babo Natale, Père's Nicole,
Topo Gigio.
Okay, Calvin, maybe a couple hours in the tank will change your mind.
There is another movie that I always associate with that period, which is the film starring Jim Varney, which is Ernest Saves Christmas,
right?
Which I think of at about the same time, as an example of how bad it was. As far as I remember, it came out here at Easter, and Ernest Saves Christmas is a terrible film starring this guy who was famous for doing a series of adverts for a postal company or something in America, and I never found him funny. But the only thing I remember about it is that in the middle of the film, he gets a job as an extra in a Christmas horror movie. Mm-hmm. And I repeat this all the time. It's the Christmas horror movie that I wish existed. It was called Christmas Sleigh, Slay, S-L-A-Y. Great. And the tagline was, "He knows if you've been bad or good, and he's got an axe."
I want to see that.
I know. So that's the one thing I always wanted to see, but I never
I want that to be a piece of dialogue. The thing that I remember now about the Santa Claus as well, and the thing that I have an awareness about the fact that it's not great, but I find it funny that the actual storyline of the movie is that Tim Allen's son, who's called Charlie, because all kids in Christmas movies are called Charlie. He isn't interested in spending time with his dad. He's a father who doesn't try very hard. He tries very, very hard to try and please his son. He's not great at it. He's not a great dad. But his son is so uninterested in him until he starts to become literally Santa Claus. That's what it takes to get his kids' attention.
Or what I take away from that is he's not uninterested in him until he starts to put on weight. That's how he becomes Santa Claus, is he puts on weight.
But I like that the movie, like, for a long time, is treating it like, are you okay? Because this is weird that you're doing this to try and get your son's attention. It is very, very funny to be able to sort of treat it with that lens of like, he might not be okay.
Okay, so my choice now, Gremlins, which is back in cinemas at the
Brilliant.
Moment. Not least because it has the darkest version of the Santa Claus coming down the chimney story I have ever heard. Because that whole speech, which ends up with her saying, and that's when I discovered there was no Santa Claus, because basically the father has come home drunk, died in the chimney, and then been slowly cooked over the festive period. I mean, I remember watching that and thinking, good Lord, this is
PG.
it was really. I mean, there's a thing about the old lady being fired out of the window on the Stanner stairlift,
but that's kind of silly.
But the story about that's how I discovered there was no father. I mean, that's kind of almost like something out of a John Waters movie. Mm-hmm. It's such a really, really. I mean, I remember watching it in the cinema, going, no, really, is that where it's going? But I love that film, and I love it because it's that. Because it was taking a pickaxe to all those kind of, I love It's a Wonderful Life, but I like the darker.
I think that was in the era as well, wasn't it, when like Spielberg was like behind the scenes on a lot of stuff and like putting his sensibilities into movies, even if he wasn't he didn't direct Gremlins, did he?
No,
he's a producer on it.
Joe Dante.
But he's a producer on Gremlins.
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
And that was in the sort of same era, at least in my head, as things, and it probably is quite far apart from things like Poltergeist.
Well, it's not a million miles away, because it's, I mean, you know, Poltergeist was famously the film that gave us the PG-13 certificate, because it was past PG, and everyone went, that's a PG?
Mm.
The bit with all the corpses coming out of the swimming pool, and the bit with the mad clown under the bed that strangles the little kid, and the bit with the little girl getting sucked into the vortex that looks like a massive interstellar uterus. It's like, what? That's a PG
Just
movie?
Just make sure you watch it with an adult.
It was Christmas Eve. I was 9 years old. Me and Mom were decorating the tree, waiting for Dad to come home from work. A couple hours went by. Dad wasn't home. Mom called the office. No answer. Christmas Day came and went, and still nothing. So the police began a search. 4 or 5 days went by. Neither one of us could eat or sleep. Everything was falling apart. It was snowing outside. The house was freezing, so I went to try to light up the fire, and that's when I noticed the smell. The firemen came and broke through the chimney top, and me and Mom were expecting them to pull out a dead cat or a bird, and instead they pulled out my father. He was dressed in a Santa Claus suit. He'd been climbing down the chimney on Christmas Eve, his arms loaded with presents. He was going to surprise us. He slipped and broke his neck, died instantly. And that's how I found out there was no Santa Claus.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Right, my final choice is Home Alone.
Oh, okay, yeah, very good.
Obviously.
Very good.
Yeah, I could watch that any time of year, though, Home Alone, but I try to limit it to Christmas.
Yeah.
I love John Hughes so much. I discovered John Hughes in my teens, and he's one of the reasons I got into university, because I went to university and to the one of these film interview things where all the class was asked to bring who's your favourite filmmaker, and most people there said Steven Spielberg, and I was like, have you not tried? I was like, why are you here? And I brought up John Hughes and said that how much I love the sensibilities that he brings to films, and the things that I'd noticed even stylistically, that every single one of his films ends with a freeze frame, that like just things like that I just found interesting at that right. age. And then Home Alone, I didn't know was essentially a John Hughes film, because I'd always just watched it and never really paid attention to the credits. And so as I got older, the more and more I appreciated
it. As
opposed
to unfilmed a Chris Columbus.
Yes. the director of the best Harry Potters.
well, the first Harry Potters.
No. I love it. I think it's so just, it's just great, isn't it? Like, there's so many best bits in it that I don't know if I can like pick what my favourite parts of it are.
It's really brutal. That's what I like about it. I mean, the slapstick really hurts.
Yeah,
it's
horrific.
It's Tex Avery
and
kind of two, bang.
The Lost in New York, which I don't think is as good. It's essentially the same film again, but they've just turned it up to 11, and it's psychopathic. In that, if you watch it that way with the second film, it's like, okay, this kid's going to have some problems when he gets older. I think we should be. This is like Rob Zombie's Halloween. Like, he's killing animals. Like, he's close to that. But the first one I think is.
Have I bored you with my Home Alone 2 story?
I don't think you have. So nothing you do is boring.
Thank you. This is a true story. When Linda and I were first together or married, early on, we were in New York and it was summertime and we were walking through New York and it was really magical and, you know, we were in love and it was New York Central Park. And it started snowing.
Wonderful.
In the middle of the summer.
Oh, wait. I know where this is going.
And it was the snow blowing off the set where they were filming Home Alone 2 in the hotel in the corner of the park.
Yeah.
And it was... So we literally got snowed upon by Home Alone 2 snow.
That is not a boring story
in any way.
No, not at all. That's great.
Get the hell out of here.
All right, Johnny.
But what about my money?
What money?
AC said you had some dough for me.
That effect. How much do I owe you?
AC said 10%.
Too bad AC ain't in charge no more.
What do you mean?
He's upstairs taking a bath. He'll call you when he gets out. Hey, I tell you what I'm going to give you, Snakes. I'm going to give you to the count of 10 to get your ugly, yellow, no good keister off my property. Before I pump your guts full of lead.
All right, Johnny, I'm sorry. I'm going.
1, 2, 10. Keep the change, you filthy animal.
Which means I'm going to finish off this round, in that case, by Love Actually.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
I just love Love Actually. And I know, you know, I've read so many things about people saying, oh, it's this, and oh, it's that, and oh, it's blah, de, blah, de, blah, and I don't care. And Love Actually is one of those films, you know, people often accuse me of being somebody who makes decisions about movies based entirely on the politics of the films. And yet I have read so many dissections of all the things that are wrong with Richard Curtis movies and all the terrible ways in which they're, you know, retrograde and say, and I don't care. I don't care because I believe in the magic of them. And I think for two reasons. Firstly, the scene in Love Actually when Emma Thompson cries is one of the greatest things
in cinema.
In cinema.
Yeah,
and
it really is.
I would say no matter what you think about the whole of the rest of the movie, I don't care because her crying in that scene is just
I was hoping you were
going
to bring that up. Because if you weren't, I was going to, because I agree. I think that whole film hangs on that moment.
Oh, just pierces my heart every time.
Yeah, it is shattering.
And then she does the thing, she shakes her hand in front of her face, and then she goes back out again, and she goes like, come on, you know, oh, they're all ready, I can't, you know.
And that, you know, and I think as well, especially for women, from what I've heard, I think that moment is especially telling for like how they feel and how and how truthful that moment is.
I just think it's universally it's the fact that she oh yes, just excuse me a minute, I've just got to, and then she goes off and it's genius because there's nothing else in the room other than her, and she does this and it's wordless, and it's the whole show don't
it,
tell
it thing. Might be Richard Curtis's greatest.
Yeah, I mean
we've already said it's one of the greatest things in cinema because it is so beautiful. And I think what's so heartbreaking about it as well is that she is using the Christmas present as well, which doesn't get talked about a lot in that moment. But like, she's got the Christmas present she wasn't expecting, and that means that it's confirmed
the other one has gone to the game.
But she is also using this Christmas present, and it's actually having the reverse effect.
I honestly think it's, and I spoke to Emma Freud once, who's you know, Richard Curtis's script editor and partner, and Emma Freud said that when they were shooting that scene, she was lying down on the floor by the side of the bed because she was, you know, doing it. And I said, I presume you did it once. She said, no, we did it four times. And
wow.
She said, every single time, Emma Thompson did that.
A present only each tonight. Who's got one for Dad?
I am.
Let Mummy go first.
Okay, I'll get it. I'll get it.
No. I want to choose mine. I think I want... this one.
I have, of course, bought the traditional scarf as well, but this is my other slightly special, personal one.
Thank you. That's a real first.
Rip it. What is it?
I'm going to... All right, I'll rip it. God, that's a surprise.
What is it?
It's a CD. Joni Mitchell, wow.
To continue your emotional education.
Yes. Goodness. That's great.
My brilliant wife.
Ah, yes. Actually, do you mind if I just absent myself for a second? All that ice cream. Darling, could you make sure the kids are ready to go?
All right,
I'll be back in a minute.
Moons and Junes and Ferris wheels, the dizzy dancing way that you feel.
And also, and I don't care what anyone thinks about this.
Go on.
I love Hugh Grant dancing through 10 Downing
Who
Street.
Doesn't Who like doesn't like that?
It's just great.
Every single time, the cut off of the music and him going,
yeah, it's just...
He's great in that.
Oh, my God,
I love Hugh Grant.
Like, yeah, no, so do I.
I all of it, the bumblingness of it. Like, I actually...
I would like him to be Prime Minister.
I'd like him to be Prime Minister, yeah, if I could vote for him.
And I'd like him to do the speech that he does to the evil American president.
Yes.
Played so brilliantly by Billy Bob Thornton. Yeah.
Well, it seems like Hugh Grant is taking that role on at the moment on Twitter.
Yeah.
He is trying to sort of inspire that hope at the moment.
Well,
I think Love Actually is great. I have a similar relationship with Richard Curtis, where I like most of his stuff. I have a problem with About Time because I enjoyed that movie and I was enjoying the feeling of it all, but it created a rule in time travel and then broke it.
Yeah.
And I was like, but you created that rule, that's the one rule. I was like, okay, I get it, that's the one rule you've created and everything else is up for grabs, but then you broke it and I was like, how am I supposed to, like, I don't know, that just,
I know
that
there is
me.
The whole thing, but once you get into the timey-wimey thing, you have to stick rigidly to it.
You get your own rules.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like Richard Curtis's movies mostly, and I think that Love Actually is no exception. I think it's an essential Christmas watch.
Good. All right, so Love Actually, we're agreed on. It's a Wonderful Life, we're agreed on.
Die Hard we're agreed on.
I will give the Ron Howard Grinch a second look.
This is just a funny story. When we had, we did a project a few years ago with Ron Howard and Brian Grazer's company.
Right.
And
we being you and Dean.
Me and Dean, yeah. And we were, because I don't know if I've mentioned, but I'm in a comedy duo called Jack and Dean.
You never mentioned it before.
And we did a project with them. And we luckily at one point got to go for dinner with Ron Howard. And it was at his favourite restaurant in central London. And we had this little section cornered off. It was me and Dean and a bunch of other people who were working on similar things. And Ron Howard turned up. We're all suited and booted.
And he's wearing the baseball cap.
You know, do what you want, Ron Howard. And he had his dinner.
He can do whatever he wants.
And then he and then he left earlier than everybody else. Fine. Mm. But Dean had a few wines at this point. And just as he was about to go, he sort of just tapped him and said, I just need to tell you, I wouldn't be able to live with myself, but I think that The Grinch is one of the greatest, it's one of my favourite films. And Ron Howard was so taken back by this compliment that he was like, okay, thank you. Because I hear that making it wasn't fun.
Oh, right. Okay.
And there was a day where Jim Carrey was complaining so much about wearing the Grinch costume that Ron Howard did it as well and directed for the day dressed as the Grinch. So they were both in full Grinch head-to-toe outfit. That was just a funny story.
Lars von Trier's version of that was he directed the naked scenes from The Idiots when he was naked. To which the thing is, Lars, that's just you.
You don't need to do that.
If you directed them dressed as the Grinch, I would have bought it. But running around and saying,
I would love that.
That's just weird. All right, well, happy Christmas, Jack, and I'll see you in the new year.
Merry Christmas.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.